Ronnie Heiniger will present remote sensing for nitrogen decision support.
Thanks, Carrie. I have to say it twice myself, but many times. So, at any rate, let's talk a little bit about remote sensing from a different standpoint. I do want to give a shout out to some of the people who have contributed to some of this work, including Dr. Jeff White, Dr. Randy Weiss, Dr. Mike Flowers, Dr. Ravi Shapradan, and others who have been important in remote sensing studies over the years. You know, what I'm wanting to speak on today, in deference to some of the canopy sensors that Newell was talking about, is passive sensing, using solar reflection radiation reflected from a crop canopy and understanding what that means in making nitrogen support decisions here. Of course, with the ultimate sensor being the human eye, by intuition we look at a crop field and we say, there's something different out there, and can we use something to allow us to make a decision about those differences that give us confidence that we can either reduce nitrogen rates or improve crop yield. I have to be honest, over the years as we've looked at this, some of these techniques haven't gained a lot of acceptance. But I think there are some changes coming in the future here that allow us to start to thinking about this passive remote sensing in a different way, and that is the use of UAV vehicles to gather information. Part of our problem with using passive sensing, we're dependent upon the amount of solar radiation falling on the scene, the ability to put an aircraft or other vehicle in the air in time to get that information, and then, of course, to have light conditions that are consistent so that we can make those decisions. Of course, UAVs, as you can see here by this little UAV vehicle working this field, give us an opportunity to get quick information from the field, to see differences on a very tight scale, as you saw there, or to get away from that field in a way to see it on a whole field basis, to look at the same things that our human eye looks at, which is relative differences in that field. I'm sure as you've looked at these pictures from this vehicle, you've noted differences, say, in color between some of these plots, or perhaps in density between some of these plots. That's the basics that I think we have, and the opportunity that we have in the future using some of these vehicles. Now, most of the remote sensing, passive remote sensing, has been done on multispectral sensors using wave bands similar to what Newell talked about earlier, those in the green at 550 nanometers, the red in the 600 to 700 nanometers, and the near infrared to 700-800. I don't want to leave out the fact that there are other opportunities out there. We've certainly seen studies on using thermal sensing to look at the thermal properties of the canopy, or hyperspectral sensing to look at the whole spectrum there, the whole signature of that canopy is represented by that line in this graph here. Let's talk a little bit about what's been done in passive remote sensing here, of course, using small or larger plot studies, as you can see in this graph. There's been a number of studies done since the early 90s in looking at the passive remote sensing and determining nitrogen status in a corn crop here. Many people sitting in this room have participated in studies or been instrumental in moving that science ahead, including some of the studies that we did here at North Carolina State in the mid-2000 by six range there. In addition, there's been studies not just on corn. We spent a lot of time on talking about nitrogen status of corn, but on wheat as well, and there's been a number of studies on wheat looking at passive remote sensing or even active sensors in the case of Bill Ron in wheat in remote sensing. What's been the problem with part of this approach? And it's the same problem that Newell and others have mentioned as we looked at using sensors, and that is we've got interference. We've got soil reflectance that interferes with our passive sensing, particularly at a time when we'd like to get in the field at V6 or V7 stage in corn. Oftentimes, the requirement of nitrogen for corn is very small at that early stage and ramps up after we're putting on that nitrogen application, so it's difficult to see differences that you might expect to see there in the field. And then, as our last speaker just mentioned, changes in environment, more rainfall, dry weather, all of those can change our yield prediction or a need for nitrogen following that remote sensing opportunity there. Whoops. Well, get to the right spot. Oh, sorry. It's good to go down instead of up. This is some of the work that we did in looking at passive remote sensing, just to remind us of what we tried to achieve. Recognizing that it was difficult to look at early season decisions, we focused on the same thing that some of the growers have focused on, which is the mid-season nitrogen decisions, looking at corn from anywhere from the stage of V10 to VT, making an application when that corn canopy is closed so that we aren't looking at soil reflectance, and also taking the opportunity where some of that nitrogen has been absorbed by that crop so that we're starting to see some of those visual symptoms in nitrogen stress start to come out. And this is the typical curves that we see as we look at corn and test it in that status. You've got nitrogen, no nitrogen planting, or in other words, a situation with very low soil or residual nitrogen where your economic end rate's fairly high. A similar study side by side on the same soil test where you've had plenty of nitrogen available, and those then relate to differences in visual as we look at that NRI image there. And so we can pick out differences in nitrogen response using remote sensing. And then, as I said earlier, one of the advantages to using remote sensing in this manner is that we can do it relative to a green strip or a nitrogen-rich strip within the field so that we can bring several years together. And that's the situation in this picture here. We're looking at 2000 to 2002, several different six different fields in each of these studies. You can see the arrows pointing to those two situations I highlighted earlier. And you can see we could develop an algorithm based on that that looks very similar to algorithms developed for use of a SPAD meter in making nitrogen support decisions here, where you've got a fairly wide range of relative reflectance, and then all of a sudden as that crop comes under stress, you get a very sharp decrease in that nitrogen amount and need for nitrogen in that field. And again, all of these are based on a relative difference here within the field. All of our studies over the years have shown the need to utilize that relative difference approach, and that's similar to many other studies that have been done in this field, the need for that reference strip in this field. Now, does that work? And indeed, as we've seen in other studies here already this morning, that we can see some advantages to using these approaches in a side-by-side study. This was work that was done in 2002 in North Carolina. You can see that the nitrogen applied was very similar to realistic yield estimated, which is what we use in North Carolina to determine optimum nitrogen rates, and much smaller than what the standard nitrogen rate for a corn grower in that region of the state would have been. Our yield was every bit as good as either of those other approaches, and of course our nitrogen use efficiency was much higher. In 2004, we did a similar study, and this time we actually measured nitrogen loss by looking at groundwater as well as runoff from this field, and you can see we had very similar advantages here. Nitrogen applied was similar to RYE. Our yield was slightly higher. Our nitrogen use efficiency was better. The N loss from that field in pounds per acre was much improved over what we'd had in the other two approaches. So indeed, the use of remote sensing to look at nitrogen use has some value, practical value. How is it applied in use? And we have seen a number of companies following that initial study that we did in North Carolina try to adapt some of these techniques and use them on farmer field in a commercial operation. And this is how I just want to step through the processes that most of them are using in this process and show you what those steps are. First of all, of course, you require that digitized aerial image. Most of the time it is in a three-band sensor with near-infrared, green, and red reflectance utilized here. Most of these companies have to stitch images together in order to get images of larger fields or large areas, and that's where some of the tools that have come along in the industry have been very helpful. For instance, GeoVantage, the ability of their sensor to actually rectify the image to the site and stitch these images together in real time from the aircraft was very useful, and we have used some GeoVantage images were during the time in which they were available to us. This is of an important and sometimes very difficult on a commercial scale process in order to get to the initial condition. From there, it becomes fairly standard. We clip the field in the question here to identify which field the grower is going to apply the nitrogen to, and then we use this algorithm or some other combination of things in order to make the decision about what those nitrogen rates need to be. In this case, why we've applied that algorithm to this field. But keep in mind, on a commercial scale, most growers most companies are going out there and actually using field scouting. You're using the image actually to identify zones in the field, and then going out and scouting and identifying how much nitrogen they would recommend for that particular zone. I think in the future, if you're going to have the time efficiency that we need, we have to work in some way to standardize or digitize that process so you're actually bringing a rate recommendation directly from the photograph as we see in this illustration here. And then we have, of course, the comparison here between the near-infrared photo and the RDBI image where we've made that recommendation. The nice thing, again, about utilizing remote sensing is that comparison. You're able to pick out an area of the field either with a nitrogen-rich area or with an area that has sufficient nitrogen, good growth, and you're able to use that as your normalizing influence upon that scene. And then finally, you generate the recommendation map that goes to the controller. Here's the entire process that has been used in North Carolina by a number of different companies. They acquire the image, they convert it into the relative GDVI image, and then they convert that to a prescription, typically on a gridded basis so that they can utilize it in a controller to change rates as they go across the field. Usually these grids are the same width as the controller boom or the applicator boom. This can also be done in wheat. I think one of the most successful applications that we've had in wheat on a commercial basis is actually determining whether we need to apply extra nitrogen in an early spring green-up period in order to thicken up the wheat stand. And that has been based upon some studies that we did in looking at just using near-infrared bands of that image and relating that digital count from that near-infrared band to the density of tillers in the field. You can see here four different fields in North Carolina, different relationships between the four fields. Again, by utilizing some relative differences, we can condense that data set into a single relationship by taking a tiller count at a very dense area of the field and then taking a measurement on a bare soil basis where we can relativize that reflectance and to the tiller density in each of these areas. And as a result, we can come up with a single relationship that captures 77% of the variability between these fields. That's been a very useful tool in determining whether we need to apply early nitrogen. The other thing that's been done in this and on a very limited commercial basis is to utilize a similar approach as we did with corn and looking at wheat decisions at GS30 at joining time. Again, utilizing different rates, looking at different economic optimum and relating it to reflectance just prior to GS30. The difficulty there has been that in most cases this works pretty good when we have thick enough stands so that again that soil influence is moderated within that scene. We have a fairly good relationship between the optimum GS30 in rate and relative green digital counts from that field. And again, reference to a reference strip there. But where we have had difficulty is, again, where we have very thin stands. We don't get very accurate readings, particularly if we have previous nitrogen applied on a thin stand like we would recommend on a GS25 or early green-up application. That can mask our end requirement. And, of course, then, as we stated earlier, the same thing happens in wheat as it does in corn. Differences in the environment from that GS30 to flag leaf period can give us very different needs of nitrogen for that crop here. Have there been instances where these remote sensing applications, such as I've described here, have been utilized? And there are. In North Carolina, we've had four different entities utilize some of these techniques, using some of these algorithms that I've already discussed. Probably the largest application on corn has been this mid-season side dress, B10 to VT on corn there. Open ground farm, some 30,000 acre farm in eastern North Carolina has been very adamant about utilizing this approach there. Murphy Brown and their farming operations in the eastern part of the state have utilized this approach. And we've had ag consultants that have taken these image-based approaches to nitrogen management in North Carolina. You can see that over the years there, as we've from 2006 to the present time, that in application of nitrogen to corn increased fairly steadily there up until about 2010. And during that time, one of the things that helped that increase was the availability of images like those made available by GeoVantage early in their existence there that helped promote or get growers that image in a way that they can quickly use that. Since then, it's declined, however. And part of that decline has become because of the higher corn prices, relatively low nitrogen prices here, particularly in the last year. And because of that, growers have had less incentive to use sensor-based approaches or remote sensing to make call upon that nitrogen there. The same thing can be said about the application to that early GS25 or early green-up period in wheat. We've seen a fairly consistent but not a very dynamic increase in acres over the years there in using that technology. Certainly that is encouraging. The growers would be willing to take that advantage of that, even though that's very difficult and sometimes it causes them to have to wait to put those nitrogen vehicles in the field, but still underwhelming as to the response of utilizing that technology. That's not to say that that's the only technology or only commercial application of remote sensing for nitrogen management that there has been. Intime from Cleveland, Tennessee, had utilized remote sensing for nitrogen management in cotton. They did so strictly from NDVI image, and again, as you can see here in their process here, what they're doing is they're scouting the field, using that NDVI image to determine what those nitrogen rates ought to look like, and then making a prescription that is applied to the field based on a zone or based on differences. Envision is doing the same thing in their approach, using an NDVI, basically coupled with a scouting decision in order to help the grower make a better nitrogen decision in his application there. And you can see here's an illustration from the InTime website of different fertilizer applications on cotton from their application. So what's the difficulty? Why have we been underwhelmed in the use of remote sensing and nitrogen application decision? And I think it comes down to two factors. First of all, time. Time is money to the grower. When he usually is ready to go into the field, that's when we're also trying to get these images and converting them and processing them and back to the rate applicator. And that difference in time is usually difficult. I don't know how many times I've been called by a grower saying, "I'm waiting on my images. Can I afford to wait just a few more days before I could get into this field here?" And that's part of the problem with remote sensing, is somehow cutting that time factor down and making it instantaneously as possible. And then there's the cost. Unlike other activities, as you get more acres involved in remote sensing, you got more processing costs involved. And so it's difficult to gain economy of scale in this process. So what is the recommendation to try to overcome those two hurdles in remote sensing? And I think it does come down to what we talked about at the beginning. You know, today the military utilizes UAVs to scout regions of foreign countries, identify target threats, and instantaneously call in strikes upon that target. I think that's the same technology that we have to have if we're going to make remote sensing viable in agriculture. We're going to have a, a UAV at this field site or on a pickup located at the field that's going to fly the field, instantaneously convert that image into a nitrogen recommendation, send that information to a rate controller on a tractor waiting there at that field, and bring that nitrogen. That will overcome that time factor and increase the popularity of using remote sensing. I think if that is, if we can do that, I think we could see the utilization of this passive remote sensing on a wide scale, given the success that I think it has the potential to bring here. Certainly, it gives us the opportunity also to utilize other wave bands and other factors in this. Any questions? I think that gives you a little bit of idea of what remote sensing looks like today.
We're actually at time for the break, so we can take questions for Ronnie, Harold, and also Newell, if they're still here.
Yeah, Peter. Yes, it is a difficult situation to find the time when that light reflectance is consistent enough to get a good image and to get one that gives you valuable information. You're exactly right. There's a lot of that's part of the problem with passive remote sensing is the weather is always going to have some trick up its sleeve in that process.
Farmer, if he's going to make a decision, he needs to know what he's doing to the nitrogen cycle.